The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, save me from myself. How are you?
Oh, my Lord. I was struggling to follow all of that, Howard. But anyway, I'm happy that people have got some important matters to think about. And I'm going to start with some good news and some bad news before we get into the real meaty things. Bad news is that there was this attack on a grocery store in Petah Tikva. Unknown assailants threw a grenade into a store. This is almost like a terror attack that we would normally become used to, but unfortunately have become used to. But this occasion apparently is more about criminal activities rather than terror attacks. This store owner has been attacked not for the first time. He had already suffered a stabbing. Was taken to hospital, and now his store has been attacked. Not really quite sure what stands behind that. But a much, much more pleasing story is one that took place in Beersheba over the weekend when a pizza delivery young teenager arrived at a home to find the parents in great distress because their child apparently was suffering something like a seizure, and they really had no idea how to respond to this. The parents were in great distress. Good fortune for these parents is that this young 17-year-old pizza delivery boy had also been a volunteer with Magen David Adom, with MADA, the Israeli version of the Red Cross, the Red Star of David. And he had some training. He immediately went into action and he helped to control the child's temperature. He called the emergency services to help. By the time the ambulance arrived, the child already was stabilized, in stable condition, and he really brought something more than just a pizza to that home when he made his delivery. So this is a kind of a wonderful story where the parents said that their pizza was topped with life. Which is exactly what happened, because it would appear as if that he could have saved the child's life by acting very quickly. So some good news there, and it escapes from some of the virtual reality, because we have a lot of reality on the ground than the virtual sort.
Which is just
here
a little bit more scary. Reports of police hacking phones of Israeli civilians has grown even further, talking about the world of technology, and could have widespread implications. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so a story that was published in the Israeli newspaper over the weekend has really added fuel to this particular fire. We've already had claims that one of the key witnesses in the Netanyahu trial had his phone hacked, that important information had been withdrawn from his phone. His phone was drained. That's the term that they use now.
Wow,
in this
drained.
Technological. His phone was drained, apparently, of information, of contacts, of photographs, even access to microphone and camera, to be able to actually activate the microphone and the camera without the owner of the phone knowing about it. So listening into conversations and potentially even watching where the individual is. The Justice Minister Gideon Saar has weighed in on this particular discussion. He was interviewed on TV about it after the newspaper, the Kalkalist, published a whole list of people who seemingly had no allegations against them, but whose phones apparently were hacked by using the Pegasus software produced by the company NSO in Israel. And a lot of questions being asked about where the line is drawn as to what would allow the police to actually load the software onto somebody's phone when there are no allegations against them, when there are no suspicions, when there are no charges that have been laid against them, and yet people seem to be hackable, if that's a term, almost at every turn. Now, the Justice Minister has said that the Justice Ministry knows nothing of all of these claims that were published in the newspaper. Apparently, there was one particular event where courts authorized the hacking of somebody's phone. We're not sure if that was the case with this particular witness in the Netanyahu trial. The police have claimed that they didn't hack anybody's phone without first getting a court order to allow them to hack the phone. So there's going to be some interesting tallying up going on between the various claims. First of all, saying that court orders were obtained, the Justice Ministry saying they're not aware of it. It seems as if, though, there might be even a state commission of inquiry implemented into this particular incident, because the Israelis are saying our democracy should have some limits. The police should not simply have the right to hack our phones without a court order, absolutely, without any allegations being leveled against somebody, an ordinary citizen who's going about their everyday business, who may well have some interesting information about a particular event, or may well incriminate themselves and then solicit potentially an inquiry. People are saying it should be the other way around. First of all, an accusation, then the investigation, and then finally come up with a conclusion. If illicit phone hacking is part of the investigation and authorized by a court, then, you know, we can potentially accept that situation, but not the situation where where police go what's called fishing. They just try and see if they can pick up snippets of information which could potentially incriminate somebody, and then an investigation, and then a charge is laid, rather than the other way around. And of course, this has had massive impact on the Netanyahu trial, because now the former prime minister is asking for a mistrial, or at least a delay in his trial, as a result of the claims that certain witnesses had their phones illicitly hacked without authorization. The irony, the supreme irony about this whole situation, is that it would be very, very difficult for people to think that such unauthorized illicit phone hacking was going on simply at the behest of the police, junior or senior police even. There is a view that this might well leak very, very high up, potentially into government echelons. And the irony, of course, is that it all took place on the watch of the former Prime Minister Netanyahu. So he is now the one who, ironically, is laying a claim against it and trying to claim a mistrial for his trial as a result of one of the witnesses having had their phone tampered with, when he was potentially involved in authorizing it as Prime Minister, probably for other people, in the first place. So there's a lot of mix going on at the moment, not clear exactly where all of this is going to go. I think it would be very, very difficult for me to see a situation where some sort of a formal commission of inquiry is not launched, people having much less trust in the police now than ever before, and potentially wanting to know whether this goes up to elected officials in the government or not.
It's a story that I worry about, because you just never know where this is going to lead.
You never know where it's going to lead. And if this is what we're seeing now, I imagine that this is probably the tip of the iceberg. I imagine that there is a lot more water to flow under this bridge yet. And if this is what we're seeing now, the question is, how did the whole thing come out in the first place? My inquiring mind says, did the former prime minister know that this was going on and then bring it to the court's attention in order to help his case, when he was familiar with the fact that this was a tactic that was generally used, and suddenly discovered that it had been used against somebody who's involved in his own trial, and now he's trying to turn it on its head and use it in his own favor? That's the question that I ask. There's no evidence of that, and I should emphasize that this is just me being a little cynical and a little inquiring, but I have no evidence to support my cynicism at the moment, but there is still a lot to come out.
Israel has appointed a new attorney general. Who is the person?
So for the first time in Israel's history, we have a female attorney general in the form of Gali Baharav Miara. That's a double-barreled name, Baharav Miara. Her name is Gali. She is in her early 60s. She is a relatively unknown person who was presented yesterday to the government along with two other candidates to be voted upon. We are told that Gali Baharav Miara was unanimously appointed by the people who had the right to vote to elect this particular official. It included the outgoing Attorney General Avichai Mandelblit, it included the Prime Minister, and included other senior government officials who had formed this committee, including the Justice Minister, Gideon Saar. They were the ones who yesterday appointed Gali Baharav Miara as the new Attorney General. As I say, she's relatively unknown, but according to all that has been published about her and all that has been said about her since her appointment. She has all the experience, the knowledge, the ability, and the skills that are necessary to undertake what has become an enormously difficult job in the state of Israel. And of course, the first thing that she's going to have to take under her wing is the ongoing Netanyahu trial, which of course forms part of the responsibility of the state attorney general. And so that's going to be one of her very, very first tasks, something of a baptism of fire, one might say, for someone taking up the job. A lot of questions as to whether an unknown person has been appointed in order to allow a greater manipulation of this particular person by senior government officials going forward. I think that would be enormously difficult because this has to be a job of a given to a person who's relatively independently minded and is willing even to go against those who have appointed her or him, as indeed her predecessor Mandelblit did when laying charges against Prime Minister Netanyahu as he was then still in office, even though Mandelblit's boss and the person who appointed him was in fact the prime minister. So an enormously difficult situation. We understand that Gali Baharav Miara has had 30 years of work in the state attorney's office. She's also done some work, prosecution work for the state in the city of Tel Aviv. She's been an external advisor to law firms in Israel and apparently is imminently qualified to pick up what I think would be a job from hell. But there you go. You know, everybody has their excitement that they wish to pursue. And I guess this will be hers. The job is due to last for a period of 6 years. She will have, I'm sure, a lot of interesting work to do during that time.
There's no doubt about that. An earthquake siren has been added to the Army's early warning system. Give us the context here. How important, and we've spoken about these earthquakes before, but if you could just give us a sense of how much of a concern earthquakes actually are in Israel.
Earthquakes are an enormous concern in Israel, and you know there is a feeling that in spite of a lot of preparation work that's gone in recent years in order to be ready for the next big one, that we're still not adequately prepared for what might come next. The last major earthquake that took place in Israel was in 1927, so almost 100 years have passed since the last large earthquake. There are some people who predict that the next large earthquake could be in the region of 6.5 to 7.5 magnitude on the Richter scale, which would be an enormous earthquake, and would come from the Jordan Valley area around the Dead Sea, which is where the two tectonic plates, the Asian plate and the African plate, meet, and apparently is the source of major earthquakes or potentially major earthquakes. We're very fortunate that up until now, since 1927, we haven't seen a significant earthquake that has caused widespread destruction, loss of life, injury, you know, because we could easily expect that to happen. But in as part of the preparation work, and a lot of the preparation has involved strengthening buildings, making them more earthquake-proof. A whole government program was implemented in order to try to improve the strength of buildings and to make them more resistant to earthquakes, to be able to withstand major earthquake activity. But now the Army, which already has an early warning system, which has been sounded in Israel on numerous occasions, unfortunately, in the face of incoming missiles, has said we already have all of these sirens across the country, which could be used to warn people in the case of a major earthquake. Those few seconds warning that people get could be the difference between life and death when a major earthquake comes along. Why do we not use the already established infrastructure for a different purpose, which could also save people's lives? So that is exactly what's happened. We have 120 seismic monitoring stations across Israel, a network that is connected together. And the moment one of those seismic monitoring stations detects a strong earthquake, which is considered to be of the magnitude of 4.5 or above, the early warning system will immediately be sounded across Israel. effectively warning people of the earthquake. And the idea is, as opposed to missiles where people have got to run to their bomb shelters, when an earthquake siren is heard, you have to run to an open space. So the reaction has got to be entirely different and go against our established
intuition.
Poor
Israelis, absolutely,
And apparently the earthquake siren comes with some verbal warning which says earthquake, earthquake, in order to distinguish it from a bomb siren. So all in all, we're going to have to be very ready for all the different sirens that might come our way. But we are told that this siren could literally be the difference between people living or dying, because enough warning could allow people to get out of a building and go into an open space, which will make things a lot safer for them. So we're going to have to get used to this idea of, is it an earthquake? Is it a missile? What do we do next? We're going to have to really think about it when hearing these sirens. There was a test conducted of this earthquake siren in the last few days in certain limited areas of Israel, just to try it out. But this is a real thing, and the longer time goes by, I mean, we've discussed last week and the week before a few minor tremors, some we've felt from the western side, from the Cypriot Greek side of the house. Mm. The one that we're really concerned about is potentially a major earthquake in the Jordan Valley, and we are told that it's just a matter of time before that happens.
Crazy, and it's little wonder that anxiety levels just seem to get higher and higher. 7:59, Anthony Reich, thank you as always.